The All Focus Podcast, bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Welcome to Law Focus, the show with the staunch focus on the law. My name is Basil Shirinda, and I'm going to be your legal guardian for the evening. Right at the heart of Bramfontein, I'm bringing you the best of legal argument with the greatest of legal opinions. And right here, sitting here, I will be tackling the issue of human trafficking in the country. The legislation that governs that area of law is Trafficking in Persons Act, which is a preventing and combating thereof. Now, that legislation has a couple of features that are quite interesting. It says that the country would have jurisdiction in respect of an act that is committed outside of the Republic if it would have constituted an offence, obviously, under the chapter. And if, regardless of whether or not the act constitutes an offence at the place of its commission, if the person that is being charged is actually a citizen of the Republic or is ordinarily resident in the country. Now, later on in the show, we're going to be interviewing a couple of people. We're going to be interviewing the Department of Justice, and we'll also be interviewing the Institute for Security Studies to get an understanding of how to deal with trafficking in persons in the country. What are the statistics and what is the prevalence, to get an understanding of that. Law Focus listener, before we get into that, we are going to do the legal hotspots for the evening.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
Welcome back for the Legal Hotspots for this evening. We are looking at one of the most exciting times of our life. And the first story looks at the state capture inquiry and the fact that it's about to start. The second story looks at the NSFAS spending spree student who has now appeared in court. The third story looks at one of the a suspected killer of Mr. Dumisani Masilela, who is an actor, is also appeared in court. And also that the Van Breda appeal has actually been dismissed. The first story speaks about the state capture. The chairperson, Mr. Justice Raymond Zondo, has actually commenced the proceedings. And today, all they did was submissions and discussing how the proceedings will go and talking about what are the point of references and the departures. It will be looking into the Gupta corruption in the country, looking into the role of the presidency and the role of many other actors, including the child of the president, and the entire ministry and the entire cabinet, in fact. It will be looking, the state capture inquiry will be looking into that. We'll be looking into SARS. We'll be looking into many other entities that which have assisted with the Gupta state capture. It will be looking into that in particular. It will also, one of the fundamental aspects of it is the kind of team players or the players that which have been identified in the state capture inquiry, and we hope to see more of it unfolding. The second story is about the NSFAS student from the Walter Sisulu University who received a lot of money from the National Student Funding Aid Scheme, and she just appeared in court on issues of theft because she spent some of the money which was deposited into her account. The third one is that another suspect has yet been found in connection with the death of Mr. Dumisani Masilela after an attempted robbery. The last story is the fact that Mr. Van Breda, who actually killed his parents, his appeal has been dismissed. And that makes up for an interesting story for this week. Those are the legal hotspots for this week. Please catch us again next week for the legal hotspots. Continue with the show for the evening as we are discussing human trafficking.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
With this alarming issue of human trafficking, we also had to get your opinions on what you think is being done or should be done, and what are your understandings on human trafficking. This is what most of you had to say.
Well, I feel like human trafficking is wrong, and it's scary at the same time, so because you don't know who to trust. You don't feel safe anywhere in any environment, and I feel like the government isn't doing much to alleviate the situation. You don't only get human trafficked, like standing on the road and stuff. Even now when you apply for jobs and things, you don't know if it's legit or not, because people will tell you, this is the company, blah, blah, blah. And then when you get there, it's not what you think it is.
What I can say, people are just turned into something else that they no longer see cows, cattle, sheep as business for farming and things like that. They now see a human being as a business. You understand? Human trafficking can be into different things, like from young girls, they can be turned into prostitutes. And guess what? the people who support that kind of prostitution, the brothel houses that host young girls, is the most popular millionaires that we know from all over the world. I see people now they are into body parts of human beings being sold for different rituals. You understand? So I'm not afraid. I don't know, man. You know what? If I go to jail for wringing the neck of someone who's trying to kidnap me, God will know that I was eliminating the problem.
Honestly speaking, I feel like the intelligence, it all boils down to what the intelligence, how the strength of the intelligence in the country. So I feel like they need to recruit young people who can come up with systems that can easily monitor or threats, for example. Yeah, that's. I feel like it all boils down to that.
I think, like, since we saw Kore, during Christmas fall, there's a lot of police force. They must patrol here. And also in Brahm, I don't think there's a police station. It's only there by Hillbro. So we saw, like, the amount of, like, the vans, the all. Why don't they patrol? Because sometimes I get off school, like, late, and there are no patrol cars. We get, like, patrol cars from police. It's just the private ones, and they, like, sitting, like, they're just not going, like, around to check. Even during the day, you feel victimized just walking in Brahm. So imagine that as a woman at night. That's worse. Because you, like, there are people, okay, there are people in the streets, but then there are those characters that you, like, can see, or something might just happen now.
I don't think human trafficking is a good thing because it attacks us females. And since it's Women's Month, I think it's a relevant topic to talk about because, especially as black women, it's like we are objects. People can just take us from one country to another and treat us as sex objects. It's so painful. And I wish it can come to an end because at the end of the day, we should respect people's bodies and not see them as something just to sell. So we are not object. I'm afraid to be a victim because I've once heard this story of a friend selling another friend to the traffickers. So I'm scared because you never know who's around you. I think the police should focus more on the real issues and stop wasting South Africans' time because at the end of the day, our police system is it's really poor compared to other countries because I've traveled to other countries and I've seen the system and how compact it is and how strict it is. But South Africa, I feel like our police system is just there because it needs to be there, but they're not doing their job. They're focusing on less important things.
Law Focus, point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. You're still sitting with Basil Shirenda and we are still discussing human trafficking. Right on the line, we have Mr. Matume Mudiba from the Department of Justice. He's a legal admin officer and he's going to be explaining to us some of the issues that surround human trafficking, not only from a legal perspective, but also the practical implications that which the department has to deal with. But I understand that Mr. Mudiba deals with it from a principal perspective more than from a law enforcement perspective. But rather, without saying much, Mr. Mudiba, welcome to the show.
Yes, I would like to also welcome the listeners at home.
Yes, we are at the heart of. Well, I mean, we know that the country currently is experiencing quite a lot of violence. Particularly on women and children, because they are the most vulnerable people in society, and it shouldn't be like that. But now we need to understand from you, from the understanding, because most people struggle with the differences between the forms of violations that we have in the law, especially with violent crimes. What is human trafficking? Can we get an understanding from you?
Look, human trafficking, to start with, it involves recruitment, harboring, transporting people into a situation of exploitation through use of violence, deceptions, or coercion, and or forced to work against their will. Mm. I'll give a small example, if you don't mind, so that our listeners don't get bored on the topic. There, it's like when a person, you are in a nutshell, You are given a false statement. For instance, there is a work in Joburg. Mm. Waiter, for example, I will give waiting. waiters. There is a waiter's job, Jobek, salary 20,000 a month. False information. You run from wherever to that. From there, you are kept somewhere used in another form. It's either they violate your rights by using you as a sex worker, subjected to intensive or forced to work abnormal hours ineffectively somewhere or wherever.
Yeah. And it is also in my understanding that the statistics in the country are quite high of human trafficking.
Yes, there are alarming statistics, but we will just say approximately about 30,000 children a day might be exported, brought to South Africa or taken out of South Africa.
Wait, low focus listener. Mr. Mudiba just said 30,000 women and children are exported per day out of South Africa. Did I understand that, Mr. Mudiba?
No, not 30,000. It's an estimation of 30,000, probably a year.
That's a lot. That's totally a lot. And these are our mothers and sisters. But now, from a law enforcement perspective, I mean, what kind of legislation assists us in understanding combating human trafficking?
There is an act. Normally, you will hear the same TIP Act. It came into a bill and it was passed in 2013, where it is given the title Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Person Act of 2013, number 7 of 2013.
And so, have we seen any shortcomings with that legislation, or is it thriving?
Look, there is still certain challenges, but you know, when you are dealing with law enforcement officers and other structures, first challenges might be one of them, or few things that one can say they have. Hassles, the practical, the on the practicality of law enforcement and other challenges. Remember, it's a specialized crime, and in most instances, you have to detect or identify before you investigate. You have to detect whether the offense that was brought before you is human trafficking.
And how would you do that?
From there, you have to identify the victims. So that is why human trafficking is under a specialized unit. Not every person can just justify that it is a human trafficking, because it involves different things. I will just give you a light. For the scenario that I gave you previously, I will give you an example by Mr. Mudiba. Mr. Mudiba went for a job interview and you think the job is legit. Whatever is happening there, they take Mr. Mudiba's documentation with an intention to say, look, we are going to do you visas and other things. So in that first, you know, if they take documents from a person without his knowledge, now contribute to human trafficking. But a victim not coming out to a police investigator or any other law investigator saying, no, I'm here for a job. You ask questions. Where's your work papers? Where's your work permit? You try to identify other things. Then, no, I'm here for holiday. I'm here for visit. The more you keep digging, then the story is. And further, I will further say that other challenges that law enforcement might have, victims are not willing to give information. And in that way, it also challenges the act, because if it challenges the system in the act, because if someone is in that dilemma, if it's a child victim, it must be placed place of safety. If it's an adult, she must be placed at a place of safety known by those who will be dealing with, calling social workers to assist and so on. Not all of the stakeholders involved to know precisely the facts and everything.
And so I understand that those are the practical challenges in dealing with not only the victims but also the perpetrators. Now, how does one get to identify if there's an organizational unit? I understand that you can see it from one perspective, that if you catch a victim and then they don't have documents, or and also because they don't speak out because of fear or whatever reason. But now, how do you identify a unit, a full unit, that there's a human trafficking unit in perhaps Braamfontein or in downtown Joburg? How are you able to identify all of that?
Normally I would say, in South Africa, the Department of Justice is the chairperson, is the main man in human trafficking. Each province has a mandate to establish a team which sits, consists of NGOs, departments. They sit, they will decide on which, whether they sit bi-monthly or monthly, to check. So we have the rapid response, where it's a smaller forum where sits with cases that are reported to check, or even if it's during the night or during the emails are trending to say, guys, there is this, where, and officers don't understand. Guys, we have this person, assist us. If it's during the night, the person is referred. You see, now it's a chain.
Mm.
A person is referred to a shelter, which is hosted by community safety or social development. Remember, when the victim is hosted there are other things. Social workers will go, interview, do their check. From there, even the investigator, when he looks at the victim, he can see whether he suspects whether they should be a doctor to check whatever we cannot identify in with our naked eyes. So it will be identified there.
Mm.
Social workers will come in, nurses will come in, everyone. So the docket and also will be made there without taking from the shelter to the station and so on. Everyone will come there and get statements. From there, through the facts is when the docket can be finalized, decided. This is a human trafficking matter.
Mm.
This is not a human trafficking matter. After all the stakeholders came and get the information from the person. You know, sometimes it is difficult for me to trust anyone just to need information from me. But the only thing, people, when they go there, when colleagues go there, must make the environment user-friendly so that the victim can open up and get information.
Interesting. Mr. Madume, I'm listening to you, and I think from a notional perspective, all of what you're saying makes perfect sense. Now, it becomes quite difficult when I am a citizen of the country, and I am in a space where I suspect human trafficking, right? Now, what do I do, one, without endangering my own life?
Look, there is a helpline, which I when I check here, I don't have it.
Oh.
It's on zero. Is normally, I'm not so sure about the number.
We'll find it and we'll let our listeners know. You can continue.
That number, you can do it. Or if you suspect, if you know where we come from, we're from different suburbs, townships, there is another trend that you can see. Maybe you see people coming there in and out. This week you see this different group, another week. So those are the things that when you look, you can just say, tip off, anonymous tip off, to say, I suspect. So even the officers who will go there, the some, it will depend on the stations, it will depend on the officers. Some will also say, guys, there is this thing, come and assist. When people give information, when you don't understand, you call relevant stakeholders or other stakeholders to say, there is a suspicion of this. So it's when they can do their work. When the police do their ratings, they go there alone. They can go there, take victims, get statements, take them wherever. Then, you know, in our police station, we have other small consultation rooms where when this happens, social workers can go there and consult and everyone do the consultations.
Interesting.
So that it's here today.
I mean, Mr. Mudiba, we have had a lot of organizations coming out and complaining about how the TPA, the Trafficking in Persons Act itself, is not practical enough or does not assist in a principal manner to deal with the main issues on the ground. And then we saw regulations coming into place. Now, I need to understand that in that process, one, what were the issues that were being identified in the act itself, in the legislation itself? And with those issues being identified, were they dealt with?
Look, in the act, issues were dealt with. The challenges might be from stakeholders not knowing what to do. But every stakeholder has been informed, and the training is still continuing. And the training, I don't mean a training on one stakeholder. I mean inter-staff trainings are now settling where we meet as groups to say, look, we have these guys internally or externally. Let's deal with law enforcement. Then we further again do information sessions to the public about human trafficking, so that people can be aware. Remember, some organizations, our organization saying we are dealing with this human trafficking. But when you ask them, are you affiliated with other institutions such as social development? Do they have social workers in your institution? How do you deal with this? How do you liaise? How then you understand? Then those things are challenges that we have. Mm. And when you look at it from the other side, it's a complicated matter, and most of the cases need to be treated with confidentiality.
Yeah, I mean, and there was also an aspect of extraterritorial jurisdiction as found in chapter 2 of TPA. Now, in that aspect,
those cases, remember, if a trafficker, for instance, is someone from outside, he can be brought to, as long as our country has extradition clauses with that country, he can be brought to South Africa.
Mm.
But the challenges are our victims. Sometimes, remember, for example, I will give an example by me. Mudiba is taken from point A. Was informed that I'm going to give you a job in Joburg. What I'm going to do, I'll give money to your family for doing whatever, for maintenance goods and whatsoever, for whatever period.
Mm.
You are going to pay me when you get a job in Joburg. Remember, there is a dead bondage. So if I get my money from whatever proceeds, remember, it's either I use you as a drug pimp or in that illegal ways. and you don't have a choice. When you try to complain sometimes, you know, I will say, I know where your family comes from. I know where your parents stay. If you go and be a whistleblower, I'm going to deal with them. These are other challenges that we
thank have. You, Mr. Medima. Let me interject and push it further about this issue of consultation and this the issues that most of the NGOs had. Is that, for example, when you are using services of victims of trafficking, maybe if you benefit financially from the services of a victim of trafficking or even the victimizers, right? You are required to have intentionally participated. Now, intentionally being the aspect of Section 7. And then Section 8 goes on to say that even another person who leases or subleases a room to whoever who is trafficking in persons, right? So it means that you are facilitating this conduct. Now, here's my grapple. It requires you to have intentionally participated. Now, what about the event when you have negligently participated? Because you should have known, or rather, you should have taken steps to know who is leasing your property and what are they doing in your property. You should have known. And then, but now, because it was not intentional, then you fall short of the standard and then you get away with assisting or facilitating that conduct. What is your comment in that regard?
No. It's not about you getting away. It will depend on who deals with the matter. It's not about literally getting away. Remember, if there is a gap in legislation, we can use other legislation.
Oh, interesting. Like
when you are saying, I was not aware. Remember, even your house can be attached for being used as a commission of a crime. If the act has a loophole, then we look at other acts to assist. In particular, we have legislations in our law.
Okay. I'm satisfied, Mr. Mudiba. Thank you very much for your invaluable contribution. Anything that you want to add in closing, in summary?
And another thing that I will just say, our challenges regarding legislation. We have this type of human trafficking. You see, sometimes not have people who are not employed.
Mm.
Or are employed looking for a better salary. We are not satisfied because of our needs. Then you see an advert to say, where I am, I'm in 5 rand. There is an advert saying, the very same job, I can go and do it somewhere with an extra 13, 15 rand. For instance, they are saying, Mr. Mudiba, we know you are a legal admin officer. There is an opportunity of an legal admin officer. For argument's sake, let me give other countries, let me not give our neighboring countries. Then I look, they are saying, 15 rand. And here I'm aiming 5 rand. So I'm going to look at my expenses and jump in. So in fact, you see, now it creates forced labor. You don't know where you are going, whether it's safe or what.
Mm.
Forced labor. Whether you can see those people who were transporting drugs were called to say, this is the work. When you are in, then you find yourself in something that you don't know. But for that, it's for other day. Just for us, people must know that we have a human trafficking team in Joburg or everywhere in South Africa. For more information, they can contact Department of Justice, Social Development, NPA. They are the main people behind the human trafficking.
Thank you, Mr. Mliwa. And the helpline that we're talking about of human trafficking is 0800-222-777. 0800-222-777. Thank you very much for this, for the contribution.
Yeah.
You're still listening to Law Focus.
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Welcome back to Law Focus. You're still speaking to Basil Shirinda, and we're still discussing human trafficking. Right on the line, we have Ms. Otilia Anna Mangwanidze, who is part of the Institute for Security Studies, and they have looked at human trafficking and have a policy in that regard without taking it any further. Ms. Otilia, welcome to Law Focus.
Thank you. Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for speaking to us. I mean, we understand that the Institute for Security Studies has done a lot of studies. Can you please explain to us in short what do you do and what are you about?
Right, so the Institute for Security Studies is an applied policy institute, and we do research, technical assistance, as well as capacity building on what we consider to be threats to human security. So that includes everything from crime, from conflict, violence, and within that, crimes such as the trafficking in persons are among the things that we work on, working to both prevent but also to counter and to respond effectively to those crimes.
Yes. And so what are your findings thus far? Like, what have you found? What are the statistics? What are statistics around human trafficking?
So one of the main challenges around human trafficking is, for the most part, it's done quite covertly. So we find, for example, at least here in Southern Africa, we are faced with human trafficking on two levels. We're faced with human trafficking of people, mostly women and children, from other countries in the region, not just Southern Africa, but further afield as far north as Ethiopia, for example, in the Horn of Africa. But then we also have a problem in terms of internal trafficking. So particularly, again, mostly women and children trafficked within South Africa from one part of the country to another, with quite a number of those people being trafficked into urban spaces or to rural areas to serve essentially as forced labor.
Yes, and that has had economic benefit within it, so as money as a center of it all.
Fundamentally, human trafficking is an economic crime for the people who benefit out of it. For the people affected, obviously, it's a serious human rights violation, and for that reason, it is criminalized. But one of the things that perhaps is most concerning is just how much money is being made out of trafficking in persons globally. For example, and this is from a global figure, because here in South Africa, we still have the challenges in getting accurate statistical data related to trafficking in persons. But globally, the trafficking in persons industry is said to get up to $90 billion per year. So you're looking at an industry that's generating a lot of money for the people that are involved in the criminal side of it. And one of the things is because the primary forms of trafficking are labor trafficking, so being trafficked into forced labor or slave-like conditions where people do not receive financial compensation for their work, as well as sex trafficking, which means people being trafficked into the system of prostitution, which means that the money that is generated in the trafficking industry doesn't go to the victims or the survivors of trafficking. It essentially goes to people who are manipulating the system, as well as manipulating people into these practices.
Mm. And so what are the measures that have been put in place by the Institute for Security Studies?
Right. So the Institute, as the Institute, we work primarily with the state, but also with international agencies in terms of offering the right kind of policy and practical advice in helping to respond to crimes like trafficking in persons. Mm. This has meant contributing to, for example, the ongoing debate around the decriminalization of sex work from a protection point of view. But also it has meant a lot of the work that we've done around better understanding migration trends. So we believe that a more open, greater freedom of movement, particularly in Southern Africa, will actually reduce the number of people then who will be fraudulently involved in trafficking in persons. So So a lot of the work that we've done has been at the policy level in advising the government, but also in advising international organizations on how best to deal with trafficking in persons.
Yeah, we've also spoken to the Department of Justice, and they spoke about how to detect human trafficking. And they spoke about, for example, many of those people would not have documentation, and that's when, at least that's the first start to detecting. Now, should that policy pass of free movement, wouldn't it make it more difficult to detect who is being trafficked?
Not necessarily. So one of the key issues which has not just trafficking is the one crime, but also in respect of smuggling of persons, is the more difficult it is to be able to track individuals, that's where the issue comes in. So allowing for freedom of movement is not removing borders. It's not removing ports of entry and the need for a person to still present their passport and be processed at the border, right? So that would still remain. But it also does allow for greater collaboration, not only with law enforcement, but also the Department of Home Affairs, as well as other departments that deal with migrant issues, not just within the country, because I think that's where the issue comes in when it comes to cross-border trafficking, not just within the country, but also between countries. So working, for example, a bit closer with neighboring countries like Mozambique, Eswatini, Zimbabwe, Namibia, Botswana, for example. But also, and as I mentioned earlier, one of the main issues that we have within South Africa when it comes to trafficking in persons is that the majority of people are actually trafficked within the country.
Mm.
So it's not people coming from outside the country. It's young, it's children, it's also women that are trafficked from, let's say, rural areas or from other urban spaces into forced labor conditions within the country. So it also means it's not just an issue for the Department of Justice to be dealing with. It's also an issue, for example, for the Department of Labor, for the Department of Social Development as well, to be able to work together to have a better handle on where people are and also to have a better handle on whether unfair labor practices, for example, are not part of a forced labor movement. So it doesn't follow that allowing for freedom of movement within the country and into the country would result in higher trafficking. To cite, for example, the case of Sweden in Europe, where they created, and they are part of the Schengen zone, which is a free movement zone within Europe, but they then adopted rules within Sweden that relate to the protection of people that are being trafficked, particularly people that are being trafficked for into the system of prostitution. And what they've actually seen is a decline in trafficking in Sweden because of this, the framework that they've put in place, even though they are part of a zone of over 20 countries that have freedom of movement.
Interesting. That is an interesting piece of information. And so ever since you have made these recommendations of policy, have we seen strides? Has there been improvement?
There have been, but I think the one thing which is which I think with a dose of reality to it is that it's not that easy. It's not that easy to deal with a crime such as trafficking in persons, which is mostly underground. So yes, there have been a good strive. I think particularly the Department of Justice has been working quite hard in trying to ensure that the police especially get the right kind of training to be able to deal with detection of possible organized crime syndicates, some of whom are involved in trafficking in persons. But that's only part of the response that's needed. And I think one of the things for us as the Institute that we would really want for there to be is we need they particularly from the side of investigators, law enforcement generally, is to ramp up the efforts in terms of victim identification as well as the prosecution of offenders. And that's where the National Prosecution Authority comes in. Because it's not given as much attention as it ought to, we find that the crime does continue. But should the police and the NPA working together amplify this issue and make people more aware of it being a crime, but also of the need to effectively respond to it, we hope then that they'll be able to reduce the incidence of trafficking in person. But ultimately, and the reason we do this work, is we hope that there are less victims of trafficking and hopefully never, but also that there are people that have been in the system of trafficking are properly protected.
Interesting. That is Ms. Otilia Anna Mangwanidze, speaking for the Institute for Security Studies. Ms. Otilia, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you very much for having me.
Listening to Law Focus.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus.
We're still probing the issue of Mr. Tom Moyane and the Commission of Inquiry and his disciplinary hearing.
The purpose, as I understand, of the disciplinary hearing is to provide certain allegations, to lay certain allegations against Mr. Moyane. Mr. Moyane has legal representation, from what I know. He will face the commission as an accused. If the chairperson of the disciplinary inquiry finds him guilty, then there are certain consequences that would naturally follow. If he's not found guilty, then automatically he would be reinstated to his position as a commissioner of SARS.
Mr. Theo Mapeto is the founder of Mapeto Attorneys.
Law Focus, talking active citizenship. Law Focus, point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. You're still sitting here with me, Basil Shirenda, here at VowFM 88.1, and we're still discussing human trafficking. Right on the air, we're going to be talking to a deputy director of Embrace Dignity and the founder thereof, Mr. Jeremy Rutledge, who will be taking us through an understanding of human trafficking on the ground. Mr. Rutledge, without taking it any further, welcome to Law Focus.
Yes, well, thank you.
Whilst we were talking to the Department of Justice, we got different perspectives about the implementation of legislation and thereof. But what still baffles us is an understanding of what is human trafficking. Can you assist us with that?
Okay. Human trafficking some people call it modern-day slavery, but the Act was passed in 2013. And it defines human trafficking in a particular way. It involves not necessarily movement out of a country and into a country, but it involves a process. And it involves a means, and it can be deception, force, exploiting a position of vulnerability and something like that. So if these things are present, then a person can be charged for the crime of human trafficking, and the victim can be recognized as a victim of human trafficking. And obviously the person who's charged goes through the law process, and the victim, social services come in and they can provide support, sometimes necessary to provide protection, and psychosocial support as well. And so that's basically the law. Before, it was covered under different parts, and they consolidated it all into one law. And then they were going to move on to another one, which is related, which is adult prostitution, because child prostitution is covered under the law for children as well.
Mm.
So it's hard to explain human trafficking just in a few words, but essentially what a person ends up in is a position where they are forced against their will and have their rights limited.
Yeah. And so in your knowledge, how often does this occur?
Well, I think in my knowledge, it occurs quite a lot. But in terms of the law and the prosecutions, I think there were 10 prosecutions last year and about 8 this year, because it's quite a difficult law to detect. And people can be trafficked for all sorts of things. It can be for forced labor. Children can be trafficked for child labor. Migrants can be trafficked across borders, but it can also be trafficked within. So there's been very few cases. Because it's an illegal activity, I was at a seminar yesterday, we don't have figures on what the extent is. There's sort of estimates, but it's very difficult. And I think the estimates vary from about 30,000 a year upwards. But the actual cases prosecuted as an act of human trafficking is only in the tens. We work with women who've been prostituted, and when they tell their stories, there is, in the majority of cases, some exploitation of a position of vulnerability or some other aspect that fits into the definition of human trafficking. And so that's why we see there's quite a strong link, and prostitution provides the demand for human trafficking, which is a profitable business for organized crime.
Mm. And so at Embrace Dignity, what do you do?
Well, at Embrace Dignity, we advocate for a law which would address the demand for prostitution, because we see the present law as undermines gender equality and undermines the women who are the majority, 96%, it undermines their human dignity. And the ones we speak to, they all would rather, they say it wasn't a choice of theirs, and they'd rather get out. In fact, so we advocate for a law which was pioneered in Sweden. We call it the Equality Law, but it's also called the Swedish Law, the Nordic Law. And it's been followed by Norway, France, Canada, Ireland, and seems to be gaining momentum. And it criminalizes the purchase of sex, but not the people who sell sex. So that you are addressing the demand. It also criminalizes the pimps. And it's been quite successful in reducing the demand. Now, if you reduce the demand for prostitution, then you are reducing the demand for trafficking. Mm. And we do see there's a link.
Mm. Interesting. So at Embrace Dignity, you have identified the link between prostitution or sex work and human trafficking. And
one aspect, and that is human trafficking for sexual exploitation, because there's human trafficking for labor and other things as well.
So that's what you are advocating for. And in terms of the Traffic and Persons Act, is there anything that you think should be removed, or you think the act is okay currently?
No, I think the Trafficking Persons Act is fine. I know the U.S. provides an annual report by the State Department on the trafficking persons of all the countries in the world, and the 2018 report has dropped us from tier 2 to tier 2 watch list. And that's mainly because of its implementation. And one thing they mentioned is the Home Affairs regulation hasn't been implemented. But the Act itself, I think civil society in South Africa is generally happy with it. It's the implementation of the Act that might need some attention.
Yeah, and in your view, how have we been doing? It's been six years, or maybe five. It's been five, actually.
Well, the law is fine, the implementation is not fine. And the implementation, if you look at how many convictions you've had for human trafficking and how many convictions, we understand that there, how many incidents there are just from the people we talk to. You know, there's, so it's quite a difficult law to implement, but law we have is comprehensive and it needs the resources, and it depends how much priority is put on it. But the state has put quite a lot of priority because it falls under the hawks, and so they investigate cases that get referred to them.
Mm. And that for you has not been doing well.
Well, it's yes, I think they can improve, but it requires different state departments to cooperate. But I think they're not necessarily targeting all the aspects of human trafficking. People who are trafficked for forced labor or really labor where the people are exploited and aren't free to leave, things like that.
But doesn't that also speak to the practical implications of arrest, especially for the SAPS?
Yes, no, it does. Focus on that. I don't know why there hasn't been more. It hasn't been our main focus because we are focusing on the law on adult prostitution,
okay,
which the Law Reform Commission has looked at and has issued a report. And we see that actually if we reduce the demand for human sex trafficking by reducing the extent of prostitution, that will provide help the situation, because sex trafficking is the largest form of human trafficking. So it's best to focus on one, which is one of the significant aspects of it.
That's actually quite an interesting. And are there other policy inputs that you've made thus far as Embrace Dignity besides that one?
Are there other what?
Are there other policy inputs that you've made?
We've made policy inputs. We made policy inputs to the high-level panel, which Mochilante, the president, former president Mochilante, conducted about legislation.
Mm. Oh, interesting. Thank you, Mr. Jeremy Rutledge, from Deputy Director of Embrace Dignity and Founder. Thank you for your invaluable contribution.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Have a great evening. Still listening to Law Focus.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus.
The families of the 134 life as a dimini victims actually have received compensation from the Gauteng provincial government. We are glad that the arbitral awards that which have been given by the former Deputy Chief Justice Dikang Moseneke have actually came to life, and we are seeing movement in that regard. The interesting thing is that the Gauteng Premier David Makhura has actually said that the office of the Premier has actually paid out 159 million to all of the 134 claimants.
Law Focus. Talking active citizenship. Law Focus on VowFam 88.1, point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. You're still talking to Basil Sharinda, and we have reached the end of our show. What has become highlight of the show is that human trafficking is quite a serious issue in the country. Far more importantly is to always be safe. Do not trust anyone, because deception, abuse of power, and abduction does lead to human trafficking. But what has been highlighted by the, Mr. Mudiba there from the Department of Correctional Services is particularly that deception has been one of the key driving factors in so far as human trafficking is concerned. What also opens up conversation with regard to that is what Embrace Dignity has highlighted, that there is a link between adult prostitution and human trafficking. So for those who frequent the world looking for jobs, desperate out there to get assistance from strangers they don't know, always remain alarmed and get assistance from whoever who's your friend or family when you go to those particular meetings, particularly because of your safety. Law Focus listener. We've discussed human trafficking. We've discussed the Trafficking in Persons Act. And we've noted that there is a need for stronger implementation and regulations and policy in that regard. We also spoke to the Institute of Security Studies that which assisted us in understanding how that policy in the first place was come about and what they argue there would be the strengthening of policy should there be stronger law enforcement. From our producer, Ms. Bulele Diakopu, who made this whole show possible, from the technical production, Kutlwano Gwinch Serame. Remember that from me, if it's not legal, then it's unlawful, and if it's unlawful, then it's wrong. From me, Basil Shirinda, it's law, it's serious. Have a great evening.
Law Focus on Vulfan 88.1 Point of Information. Law Focus Podcast.